welcome to the Ben Greenfield Fitness.com podcast. We provide you with free exercise, nutrition, weight loss, triathlon, and wellness advice from the top fitness experts in the nation. So whether you're an Ironman triathlete or you're just trying to shed a few pounds, get ready for non-run-of-the-mill, cutting-edge content from BenGreenfieldFitness.com.
Hey folks, it's Ben Greenfield, and if you've been listening to this podcast for any amount of time, then you know that we've talked about the concept of biohacking before, and frankly, it seems like it's a pretty sexy topic that gets thrown around the internet quite a bit, and it's a term that gets thrown around quite a bit. Well, today, we're going to dig into the nitty-gritties of biohacking and kind of take a deep dive into the rabbit hole of especially supplements and mind-enhancing and detoxing and the utilization of biohacking for achieving some of those goals. So we're going to have some fun on this one, and I have a really cool guy on the call. He's an author, he's an inventor, he's a serial entrepreneur, and currently his role is as the founder and the CEO of a company with a pretty cool name called Simpleology. And Simpleology, which I'll put a link to in the show notes, is a special web application, which kind of sounds like a boring name because I've checked it out and it's does more than what it sounds like. But it's a web application that helps people and teams get more done faster. And Mark has started over 30 different startups, including things like SearchHound and ROIBot, StartBlaze, Neurogizers, and just a ton of things that really kind of help people make their lives better. So we're pretty honored here to have him on the show. So Mark, welcome.
Hey, thanks for having me, Ben.
So, Mark, I've got a book in front of me that you wrote, and I'm going to put a link to it in the show notes for people, but it's called Do It Yourself, Nanotech, Supernutrients, and the subtitle is The Tech CEO's Unfair Advantage. You delve into some stuff in this book, and I want to kind of get into some of the things that are in there, but first, since we're going to be talking about biohacking, Mark, how would you define a biohacker? Like, what is that to you?
It's a great question. I don't know if there's any agreed upon definition for that now. It's one of these movements that is sort of taking on a life of its own, similar in a way to like transhumanism, right? You know, if you were to ask a bunch of transhumanists, what is transhumanism? You're probably going to get a bunch of different answers. So with that caveat, what biohacking is to me is sort of a sensibility whereby you understand that you can quantify and measure things going on in your own health and take responsibility for those things yourself, even though you are not a member of the generally accepted medical community.
Gotcha. Gotcha. So you don't have to be like an aluminum foil hat wearing nerd to be a biohacker.
You don't have to be a nerd. You don't have to be a medical professional, but you'd better have a brain. Otherwise, you're going to be a dead biohacker.
Now, I think a lot of people think about biohackers as these you know, dudes and gals who are running around just doing crazy things to their body, right? You know, injecting stuff or, you know, doing cranial feedback and electrocuting themselves. I mean, are biohackers just a bunch of crazy druggies who kind of haphazardly put any compound into their body, or is there kind of a science to this stuff?
Well, some of them are, but it varies from person to person, right? You know, there are things that a biohacker would do that, you know, the average guy would consider is quite bizarre and quite strange. It all depends on your value system, right? But with that said, for the most part, most of the biohackers I know are super smart, are super responsible. Yeah, they do stuff that's outside of the norm, but they do it very thoughtfully.
So do you consider yourself a biohacker?
I would say that you know, probably since I was 5 years old, I was a biohacker without even knowing it. I think that label's probably pretty fair for me. I'm that among many other things, but yeah.
Gotcha. And so are you, when you do some of the things that, for example, you talk about in this book or that we're going to talk about as we have a conversation today, are you doing things like tracking and quantifying as you go? Or are you more one of those qualitative people, or do you actually have systems in place to test things as you go?
That's a great question. And it depends on how much free time I have, which is usually very little. Right now, because I don't really have a lot of free time, I'm just so heavily involved in the company that I'm building. I am more one of these qualitative guys. I definitely do measure things. You know, I'm in the VA medical system as a vet, and that's not really enough. So I go out and I get some other tests on my own, but I'm not obsessive about it, right? Mm-hmm. Like I don't, you know, get the data, change one little variable, and then check it out again. That's, you know, hey, if you've got the time to do that, that's definitely the way to go. But you need to be very aware of the fact that you can't quantify everything that's going on in a way that causality can be meaningfully measured. And by that, I mean, you know, there are so many things going on in your life and in your body that if you change one parameter, there are probably a bunch of other things that have changed that you haven't yet been able to measure, maybe that science is not even aware of yet. So you have to have that type of caveat.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm kind of in the same boat with you in that I really do like to try out a lot of kind of the cutting edge science tools that come our way to make our bodies better. But I frankly don't have a ton of time to do things like, you know, the CNS tap test on my iPhone and you know, logging everything over at, you know, Quantified Mind or heck, I have a hard enough time using Evernote. So so yeah, I'm kind of there with you in that I do try and listen to my body as I do some of these things, and I think that people should be aware that they don't have to walk around with their iPhone, like, you know, strapped to their cheek 24/7 as they type in all their data to see how their body responds.
That's right. So. But one thing I'll say is that we're getting to a point where biometrics are going to be so easily and ubiquitously measured. Mm. It's kind of a biometric revolution going on right now. You know, you'll be able to, with maybe one tiny sensor, be able to measure thousands of things that would have cost you probably, you know, tens of thousands of dollars to get, you know, formal testing on. We're almost there.
Oh, I know. You know, every Tuesday I test my blood, which, you know, 2 years ago, if you would ask me that, I would have been like, no, that, you know, that's, you know, $1,000 every Tuesday. But now, you know, I literally do a drop of blood on this little card and send it off to a company and they run it through a mass spec. And right now they test like 16 different biomarkers. But, you know, I was speaking with the CEO of that company a couple of months ago, and she was telling me how we're really not that far away from like an implantable, you know, kind of chip in your wrist that could do the same thing and just feed data as you go. So, yeah, I think that maybe it will get easier.
Sure. That's so exciting.
Yeah. So let's jump into some of the stuff that you talk about in this nanotech super nutrients book. You start off with the idea that maybe, you know, popping pills, which is something that I think a lot of biohackers or, you know, even like the health conscious people who are listening into this show who are maybe using lots of supplements are doing. But why is it that the people who are kind of on the cutting edge nowadays are maybe popping pills a little less?
Great question. Well, the delivery systems have improved tremendously, and most people are not aware of the advances in delivery systems. And, you know, unfortunately, there are still a lot of companies out there that, you know, for whatever reason, are still selling a lot of things that are antiquated. And that was another, you know, we get into that in quite a bit more detail in the book itself. But, you know, I'll give you one example, and I know we'll talk about this here in a minute, but I mean, the liposomal pathway of ingestion is just such an exciting thing. And it's something that the pharmaceutical industry has known about for quite some time, but there's still a paucity of, you know, liposomal medicines that have been approved. Why? Because the approval process is very difficult. And biohacking subsequently is sort of filling this gap in between, you know, the really reckless and irresponsible and ineffective nutritional industry. And then, you know, the reckless and irresponsible in its own right pharmaceutical industry, but with better technology, right? And they're like, hey, you know what, let's take all the good from all of those things and let's find, you know, the best methods.
So what it comes down to is that people who really understand this stuff are kind of wrapping their heads around the idea that maybe when you swallow whatever, a multivitamin pill, you're really not getting much at all out of it, except, you know, like expensive pee.
Yeah, in most cases, well, I don't know about most, but yeah, maybe most. You know, if you look at the quality of the stuff that's out there, you know, most of this stuff is not pharmaceutical grade. It's, you know, combined with a whole bunch of different fillers. It's a compressed tablet that often doesn't even dissolve, right?
Right.
So not only is it not bioavailable, it's just, it's not even chemically available.
It just comes out the other end like corn.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, interesting. So let's talk about some of these alternative delivery mechanisms for people who want to maybe kind of jump down this rabbit hole and look into doing things other than just, you know, kind of grabbing pills off the shelf of Costco. Let's start off with something you just talked about, this liposomal delivery. What is that?
Yeah, so it's a really fascinating thing. Basically, it's the encapsulation of a molecule around some fat, more or less, right? Now, normally the fat is phosphatidyl serine, which is freely available in lecithin. And what happens is it tricks the system into getting that substance directly into the blood. So one really interesting example is that of glutathione. So glutathione is a peptide that is usually broken down to its base amino acid components through the digestive system, right? Because, you know, normally we're not ingesting it that way. The body says, hey, let me, you know, build my own glutathione with the base components. So to avoid that particular problem, you disguise it with this layer of phosphatidylserine, and the body says, ah, yummy, phosphatidylserine, I can use that, goes right into the blood, uses the phosphatidylserine, and then poof, the payload is delivered and it's directly in your bloodstream. You have glutathione now directly in your bloodstream in a delivery mechanism that is, some people say, even more efficient than direct injection. I don't have any real conclusive data on that, but that's the general notion.
And you see, I've noticed that, you know, people like, you know, vegan and well, primarily like vegan athletes, like Rich Roll, for example, they're encouraging folks to do like their vitamin B in that way as well.
Yeah. There's all sorts of different supplements that are being handled in this way. Now, this is something that I talked about in the paper, and maybe one of your listeners is the right person to hear this. But what we need is a very conclusive database showing what different types of nutrients in what forms are encapsulatable via the liposomal delivery mechanism. And also we need people doing research on, you know, what are the best methods, what are the best substrates here for liposomal encapsulation, what are the best manufacturing methods that people can use at home.
Right. Because these are, and this is something you mentioned in the book as well, these are things that people can, if they want to, actually do at home. Like you can actually get this fat mix that you can mix up and with a spray certain vitamins like into your mouth and deliver them liposomally if you learn how to do it right, correct?
That's right, exactly. And here's where it's a little bit fuzzy, right? And this is where the biohacking community sometimes, you know, goes a little bit off into the deep end, but is very thoughtful about it. You know, there aren't a lot of data sets out there that show that the do-at-home liposomal encapsulation method is as effective as some of the methods that have been used in the industrial applications of this. So we need more data on that. But where biohacking comes in, very handily here is it says, well, we understand the science behind this. We know that theoretically this makes sense. We can actually observe that liposomal encapsulation has occurred, but there isn't a lot of comparison out there of the effectiveness of this compared to, say, you know, a professional company that has created their own liposomal formulation. So that's another area of data that we need, and hopefully someone really smart out there can do a lot of comparison there and then post the results so that the world can benefit from this.
Right. Yeah, it's interesting. And just from a personal experience standpoint, I've tried the liposomal glutathione, hearing about it through another biohacker, Dave Asprey, and use some of that at a time that he encourages folks to use it, which is when you're drinking a lot of alcohol, and certainly noticed that I woke up feeling different, but never compared it to a pill-based form of glutathione, you know, even though it is certainly purported to be far more biologically available when delivered liposomally like that or sprayed into the mouth.
One quick thing on that, I can tell you with a fairly high degree of confidence that a pill form of glutathione that is not liposomally encapsulated, like if you just buy straight glutathione in a tablet, I mean, that's a huge waste of money.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's good stuff for people to know, because I know a lot of people are like buying detox supplements for that glutathione specifically. So,
yep.
Yeah. Speaking of spraying stuff into the mouth, let's talk about another method of supplement delivery that you talk about called nebulization. Can you get into that?
Yeah. Nebulization is really awesome. And, I've had some great experiences where I was able to trip up a lot of, really great biohackers on this, because they think I'm talking about vaporization, but they don't actually know what it's all about, which is cool. It's not super uncommon. Folks who are asthmatics use nebulizers often to deliver albuterol and things like that. It's definitely well known. It's well recognized. The pathway is well understood. Essentially, what you do is you get distilled water, you run it through a nebulization machine, and it vaporizes – well, not vaporizes. It nebulizes the water. So it creates particle sizes of about anywhere from maybe 4 to 30 nanometers in size. Now, there are certain sizes that are effective and certain sizes that are not. So you've got to get a nebulizer that is actually of a size that's effective for what you're putting in there. But what you have to do is dissolve a particular component. And these have to be of particular molecular weights and particular, dissolvable to particular sizes themselves. You dissolve it in that distilled water, and then you run it through the nebulization machine, and then you simply inhale it. And if you know that the component sizes are correct, you can very, very effectively deliver a number of things into your system. And the one, again, that's very interesting is glutathione. Now, this isn't something that's recognized in the traditional medical community. You don't see it out there, but the alternative medical community uses glutathione nebulization quite a bit. And we know that because the molecular size is of a compatible size, that you can actually, nebulize it effectively, theoretically, right? Now, I trust the process enough myself to actually use that because it's way easier than doing my own liposomal encapsulation.
So you have like a nebulization machine in your kitchen or whatever, and that's what you're using?
Yep, I have a little tiny one. In fact, there's only one that I've found that's BPA free.
I would like to know.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know about BPA. I'm sure you guys have talked about that on your podcast.
Yeah.
I mean, it's an endocrine disruptor. Really bad news. It's just, it's kind of a shameful thing for humanity that we're allowing that to be used so often. But I've only been able to find one. I don't remember the name of it right offhand here, but it's there in the report.
Okay.
Now, I would like to get, hopefully someone out there listening could come up with this, but I would like to get an ultrasonic nebulizer, which nebulizes to smaller particle sizes than the one I have that is also BPA free. I don't know of one. If one does exist, or if someone could build one, that would be a great service.
You know, up until this point in my life, I'd never actually heard the term ultrasonic nebulizer, but I'm going to add that to my vernacular.
that's right. And we should be talking about this freely.
That's really interesting. So people can just buy a nebulizer. You just need to make sure it's BPA free.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Interesting. So let's talk about something else. Vaporization. What is vaporization?
That's another really, really interesting thing. So, you know, vaporizers are commonly known about in the medical marijuana community, for example. Now, for folks listening, if they've got some social hang up about marijuana, I would say, you know, read the science on that. Maybe examine your feelings about it. See if it's based on science or if it's based on, you know, just a general fear through propaganda. Not to really get too deep into that conversation, but I would say that compared to alcohol, it's probably much, much safer. Talk to your doctor about that one, especially if you've got psychological issues. But the point here is that people use that device to take their medical marijuana and pull particular chemicals out of it because certain chemicals have certain vaporization points. Now, the vaporization point is a temperature at which certain solids inside a particular item will turn into a vapor. Now, this is before the critical point where it turns into a straight gas. And when it hits that point, you can, you know, breathe it in and ingest it into your system very, very precisely. Now, I'll give you a really interesting thing here about this. And again, if there's anybody that's hung up about me using pot as an example, I apologize if that offends you. But, you know, let's just look at it from
I live in one of the two states where it's legal. So,
yeah, you guys are kind of over it now. Yeah. And I think we all should be. And I'll give you one really specific reason why. So the example is there is a component in there. All right. That one of the chemicals is a very, very effective analgesic, a very effective painkiller. And the vaporization point of that is lower, or I'm sorry, is actually a little bit higher than the THC vaporization point. So CBD is the analgesic, THC is one of the well-known psychoactive compounds. So what you can do with medical marijuana is you can vaporize out all of the THC. Well, I say medical marijuana. It's now you know, legal recreationally in Washington State. But you can vaporize out the THC, and then one of the things that's left is the CBD, the cannabidiol. So without any psychoactive effects whatsoever, you could hand someone that DTHC'd medical marijuana or you know, recreational or whatever, and give them the precise temperature for a vaporizer and allow them to pull out the CBD from that without any psychoactive effects, hardly at all. Now, think about this. That means that you can, at your home, have an analgesic, a painkiller that is far safer for you than opiate painkillers, but is also extremely effective. That is, man, if I were someone that were a cancer patient or anyone that was under any kind of chronic pain and doctors were telling me to ingest opiates and become addicted to opiates and to experience the long-term damage that's going to occur to me from being addicted to opiates, I would say that's a pretty hopeful thing. This pathway, vaporization, is open to many, many different types of compounds. So it's very exciting.
Interesting. By the way, I should point out to those of you listening in to this part of what Mark is saying, if you do happen to be, because I know we have a lot of people who are doing like Ironman triathlons and marathons and stuff like that listening in, be especially careful with this stuff just because cannabinoids are a banned substance by the World Anti-Doping Association. Right. So I don't want anybody getting popped. But yeah, I mean, what you make, the point you make is super important, much safer than a lot of the painkilling medications out there. And you can learn how to vaporize this stuff in the comfort of your own home.
That's right. And one other thing I'll say to that, for any of the elite athletes out there, while vaporizing something is far easier on the lungs than smoking something is, for example, you are still going to have some effect on the lungs. Yeah. And if you do you know, irritate the lining of the lungs, your performance as an elite athlete could very well be affected. Now, Michael Phelps may tell you you don't have too much to worry about, but but there you go.
Yeah, and I should point out though that you know, not everything that Mark and I are talking about are things that athletes can avoid. You know, liposomal delivery of, you know, vitamin B12, for example, is a perfect example. I've personally also gotten things like Myers cocktails before races, which is just, you know, a bunch of vitamin B and vitamin C, and you can get glutathione, and it's just basically one of my neighbors who is a nurse just gave me the IV. And you can certainly do things like that, and all of that is completely legal. It's like taking a multivitamin, except a very, very powerful one that you feel surging through your bloodstream right away. So this stuff does work. It's just, you know, it's slightly less convenient than, you know, taking a bottle of pills out of your refrigerator, but holy cow, big difference. So let's talk about another couple things that you mention in the book, Mark. One is sublinguals. What are sublinguals?
Sublinguals are they're nutrients that can be absorbed under the tongue. So basically, you know, you get a liquid or a solid of you know, many, many different you know, varieties of forms. You put it under the tongue, you let it dissolve, or you just let it sit there for a little while, goes straight into the bloodstream.
And so how long would someone actually put some in their mouth if they were going to dissolve something sublingually? Is there like a certain period of time that you would hold something in there?
It depends on the delivery mechanism, but it's, you know, usually no longer than a couple of minutes.
Okay, gotcha. Do you have an example of something that someone could find that would be used sublingually?
Yep, a really great example that everyone can benefit from and can actually make themselves are the form of tinctures. Mm. And tinctures are simply, you know, where you take usually an herbal substance and you dissolve it in some kind of alcohol. I would recommend vodka because it's, you know, one of the cleaner forms of alcohol, and it's intended for human ingestion. And then you let that herbal substance, you know, sit in that alcohol for sometimes up to weeks, you know, shaking it once or twice a day. And many of the bioactively available compounds are transferred into the alcohol, and then some of which, not all of which, by the way, some of which are absorbable via the sublingual pathway. So you would, you know, put a couple drops of that, whatever it is, under your tongue. Some of that's going to go in. You swallow the rest. Some of the rest would get into your blood through the normal pathway of your digestive system.
Gotcha. I actually do some essential oils and tinctures. I get from a certified organic company or through my naturopath, but things like astragalus and echinacea and oregano and some of those immune boosters, you can get in tincture form. And I know that all of those, you know, most of them instruct you to hold for like, you know, 30, 60 seconds sublingually, you know, and then you just swallow with a glass of water.
Yeah, and I tell you what, you know, one way that you can get the cost down on that is to buy herbs in bulk. There are some really great websites out there that will sell fairly high quality herbs in bulk form. It'll cost you, you know, 10% or less of what you would pay for a pre-made tincture. But, you know, there is the labor involved in doing it yourself. So,
and so you're basically just like mixing those herbs with like an alcohol to get the extract?
Essentially, yep.
Interesting. I know you get into more detail on this in the book. So well, folks who want to read more, we'll definitely link out to it in the show notes. Let's talk about transdermals. We've actually talked about this a little bit on the show before, Mark. We've talked about transdermal magnesium. But talk a little bit about transdermals and how that works.
So transdermals are really interesting. They will be absorbed directly through the skin. And it's interesting, but also one of the scariest forms of all. So, you know, some things are absorbable transdermally in their natural state. Some need to be mixed with some other delivery mechanism. For example, one of the most common ones is DMSO, right? Dimethyl sulfoxide is a solvent. It's used quite a bit in veterinary medicine. It has this really amazing but scary property whereby things of a particular molecular weight will be dissolved into the substance itself. And when you apply that substance to the skin, it goes straight into your bloodstream. super exciting in some cases, super dangerous in others, because if you were to accidentally mix certain things into your DMSO mixture, for example, mercury, which is of the correct molecular weight to be distributed via DMSO, you will give yourself a very nasty case of mercury poisoning, which is something you absolutely do not want, because if it doesn't kill you, it will give you lots of long-term health problems. So proceed with extreme caution with transdermals. There are a lot of people out there who do it in a very cavalier way. I would just tell them, wow, man, think about what you're doing. Because it may have worked for you up to this point, but it only takes one big accident to do it the wrong way.
Yeah, because magnesium is kind of like child's play compared to some of that stuff. I remember reading the book, The Doper Next Door, by Andrew Tillon, who's a recreational cyclist, and he started using transdermal testosterone cream for enhancing his performance in cycling. And he actually started to freak out because his kids got their hands on his transdermal, the hormone replacement, and that can like destroy children's endocrine systems. So, certainly folks, and I know that you say this in the book too, Mark, don't screw around and kind of do your research and understand what you're working with before you mess around with any of this stuff. So
I can't emphasize that enough. Yeah. Really.
Now, I want to mention something else that you get into, and I really like your approach to this, so I want you to talk about it a little bit, and that's detoxing. Like your approach to detoxing is kind of cool. So if you were going to detox, Mark, how would you personally do it? Like, what would be your ideal detox?
So the way I look at it is there are several different components that have to be addressed, and most of the detox products out there don't understand all of these different pathways. So what I would do is I would concoct a combined approach that includes the following. One is you got to stop poisoning yourself. Whatever that source of toxification is in your body, you better get it out of there. And it could be a number of things. It could be that you're eating junky food, which, hey, I understand, right? We do this, we like our foods, but there is a consequence, there is a cost. We have to be aware of that. Another one could be a sort of a systemic form of toxicity that's coming from, say, for example, a fungus that's growing in your body, right? Mm-hmm. A candida infection is going to be a source of toxicity up until the point where you get the overgrowth handled. Now, there's always going to be a little tiny bit of candida in your body. I think it's biologically required for certain things. The overgrowth is the problem. And by the way, subsequently, a lot of biohackers talk about this. It's, things are not necessarily inherently toxic in themselves. They can be toxic at particular doses, mm-hmm. right? So for example, if something is a cholinesterase inhibitor, could be very beneficial at one dose, could be deadly at another, right? So candida overgrowth is constantly poisoning you if you're not careful. You've got another thing could be, maybe there's BPA in your house. Maybe there's a mold overgrowth. That's something that Dave Asprey talks about. One of the really great things that he's done is made people very aware of the problem of mycotoxins. Great mm-hmm. service he's doing for folks. So that's the first thing, is to stop poisoning yourself. Very complicated topic. It's something that I think every human being alive needs to educate themselves about and needs to be aware of. Not just for themselves, but for their children too. The next thing is you need to have some form of glutathione S transferase probably boosted in your system. So the third pathway, which is to boost glutathione, is not going to be nearly as effective as it would be if you had combined it with a method of boosting glutathione S-transferase. There are a number of ways you can do this. Turmeric is one. Gerson therapy, which is really gross, we won't talk about here. Google it at your own leisure. remember, I warned you. But hey, it's also something a lot of people say is curing them of cancer. So let's not be too provincial about this stuff.
Yeah. We actually talked about it on a podcast a couple of years ago. in detail the Gerson therapy. So
you have
It's out there, folks. If you want to go to Ben Greenfield Fitness and Google it, you can find it there.
Yeah, I would say, you know, we've got to get over some of the, you know, the weird hangups we have about things and just understand our health. You know, that the hangup is a social convention that we invented as humans, has absolutely nothing to do with bioactivity or the effectiveness of anything. So anyway, do with that information as you will. The next thing is you need to have some way of binding these toxins. Okay, so toxic binders are things that will actually attach themselves to a particular toxin and then allow themselves to be, you know, pushed out of your body now. So without the binders, the toxins are sort of floating around freely. With the binder, it attaches itself to it and then gets itself set up for a pathway of elimination. Mm. So the fourth or the final thing that you need to do there is you need to find some way.
Hey, Mark, could I interrupt you for just a second?
Go for it.
What's an example of a binder?
Oh, great. Thank you. Well, I'll give you a couple of them. So chlorella is a great one. Let's see. Bentonite is another great one. Charcoal is another great one. Now, charcoal, really great example of charcoal here, right? So now the medical community will tell you that the body does not need your help in detoxifying itself. But you can know on the face of it that this is simply not true and that the medical community itself does not believe in this. Why? Because the medical community recognizes that, yes, there are toxins, and yes, your body needs a little bit of help in eliminating them if they are getting to a point where they are becoming a serious health risk, sometimes even deadly. Charcoal is known as the universal antidote in a lot of emergency rooms. It binds to a lot of toxic substances. Now, by the way, there's a technical definition difference between toxins and poisons. You don't need to worry about any of that, really. I mean, you can look these things up. But charcoal will bind to toxins and poisons of various types very effectively and will flush and will line those things up to be flushed out of your system. Yes, the medical community does recognize that, even if your doctor tells you that they don't. And that example that I gave you is irrefutable proof that even the most conservative medical community understands that certain things must be detoxified from your body. Now, why is that whole riff important? It's important because the medical community has not yet classified and identified a lot of things going on in your body. Industry is creating things faster than the medical community can respond to them. And because of that, there are a lot of as yet unidentified biological consequences going on in the body. One of them, I believe, is an excessive toxic load that is a combined effect of mycotoxins, toxic substances like BPAs and mm-hmm. other industrial byproducts that are seeping into your body. When they get to a point where your body cannot bind and flush them out fast enough, that, I think, is the cause of a lot of illness. And if you help the body in that process, it can clear up a lot of issues that you may have. Now, this is a very fuzzy area. The amount of data on this is not anywhere near enough, but do your own research. And I think that if you think about it deeply and you research it deeply enough, you will come to similar conclusions, but that's up to you.
Interesting. So I interrupted you and you were getting into like the last step of the detox.
Yep. And thank you for that interruption because that was a very important point that I was talking over there. So the final point is to help the body flush these things out. So let's say you've bound all of these things or you've deactivated them enzymatically and or you have helped the body detoxify them or oxidize them with things like glutathione. Your body still needs to eliminate them. Your body normally eliminates them through sweat, through urine, and through feces. If you speed up that process by doing things such as a magnesium oxide cleanse, which has other beneficial effects of cleaning out the lining of the colon, or by taking something like psyllium husks or taking something like senna leaf, what will happen is that elimination process will be accelerated. Those things will get out of your system a lot faster rather than, you know, linger around in your digestive tract for a longer period. And in some cases, when they are lingering around in the digestive tract, they are still effective as toxins. And so you're still poisoning yourself, essentially, more or less. So speeding up that process is sometimes essential.
Interesting. Okay, got it. So basically, you get stuff like glutathione into your body, and then you do what you call potentiating it through using, you know, something like, say, curcumin, and then you bind using like chlorella or charcoal or bentonite or something along those lines, and then you basically flush the stuff out with something that is kinder to your digestive system than like a high fiber extract.
More or less. And what's really cool about that model is that you can address those different pathways with a number of different interventions and come up with your own combination of things. Mm-hmm. Most of the different detoxification methods you hear about out there, I don't know of any of them that address all of those different pathways. And I don't know of any of them that have that level of flexibility. So that's why I came up with that model and why I prefer it.
Yeah. Well, folks, if you're listening in, this guide that we've been talking about, this nanotech super nutrients guide that Mark wrote, it's pretty simple. It's like 40 pages long. It's free. We'll put a link to it in the show notes where you can go grab it and read through it. Super duper interesting stuff. Mark's got kind of a cool style of writing that keeps things really simple. And Mark, I also wanted to kind of get into just for a moment. You know, we've talked about biohacking, but, you know, in the realm of productivity hacking in general, I know that you're kind of an expert at getting more done in less time and really simplifying life. So I wanted to make sure that I asked you about this Simpleology and what exactly Simpleology is.
Yep. Thanks for asking that. And before I answer that, one quick thing about the guide. There's also a companion guide that's not advertised on the page that Ben's going to show you, but there's another report/guide that I wrote called Reverse Engineering the Limitless Pill, which is showing some of the state-of-the-art stuff going on in boosting human intelligence. There's a lot of really exciting stuff going on with that. It shows you, you know, what I believe so far are the most effective nootropic substances and the different mechanical ways that you can address that. So that same URL that Ben's going to give you here in a second will show you how to get that as well. And it's all combined and that's all free.
Awesome.
And so Simpleology is a, like you said earlier, it's a web app that doesn't sound too sexy, but it's a more or less a tool to help you get more done faster. But the way it does it is the unique and interesting thing, and that's that it does it through the process of aggressive simplification. Everyone understands intuitively that simplifying things is very, very powerful for a number of reasons. One is you know, if you haven't focused in on a small number of effective actions in your life, it's like the difference between a laser and a flashlight, right? You know, a laser can cut through steel, a flashlight cannot. You can turn yourself into a laser as a person if you zoom in on the right things. And Simpleology as a tool helps you aggressively do that. Now, the other thing is it's like this. You've only got a certain amount of time in your life, and you can be that jack of all trades who's constantly distracted by Facebook and by TV and by every other thing that comes across your path. At the end of the day, you probably don't feel too good about yourself when you live that way. If, however, you take control of your own time and of your own productivity, you tend to feel pretty good and satisfied about yourself, and you tend to move a lot closer to the things that you want in your life a lot faster. So what we do is we have a simple process that guides you through that process of aggressively simplifying things in your life just by clicking a little link and following the prompts. And at the end of the whole process, you've got a very clear idea of what's important for you that day. It's combined with a number of other tools, that are based on the same level of science that we've been talking about with all of these different substances, you know, we've done the same level of research, if not greater research, into human psychology, organizational psychology, to help you optimize the function of your brain throughout the day, to eliminate as many distractions as possible, and to make you as absolutely effective as you can possibly be.
I love it. It's cool. And I'll put a link in the show notes too. If you're listening in, you want to go check out the Simpleology homepage. I am a huge fan of keeping life simple. For me, I know, you know, training for Ironman and chasing my boys around and trying to get a lot done. Simple is a good thing. So, Mark's really got it down. And, you know me, listeners, if you've been listening in for a while, I'm always kind of scouring the web to find the best stuff that's out there when it comes to enhancing your life, your health, your fitness, your productivity, and your performance. And, this is certainly something I'll vouch for. So check it out. And, all of that's going to be over at bengreenfieldfitness.com in the show notes for this episode. Mark, that was super cool. And, you know, I'm kind of a geek, so I love this stuff, but I think the listeners are going to dig it as well. So thanks for coming on the call today.
Hey, thanks for having me. I really enjoyed that.
All right, folks, until next time, this is Ben Greenfield and Mark Joyner from Simpleology signing out from BenGreenfieldFitness.com.
Visit BenGreenfieldFitness.com for even more cutting-edge fitness, nutrition, and performance advice.